The coronavirus has had a devastating impact at Newmarch House, the aged care home in Sydney's West. In the 5 weeks since it was first detected there, 18 elderly residents have died. At least 71 people have been infected. The catastrophe has caused untold anguish for families who have been unable to visit their loved ones, and also for the staff who were quickly overwhelmed by the scale of the outbreak. Grant Millard is CEO of Anglicare Sydney, which operates Newmarch House. Grant Millard, welcome to RN Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran.
Grant Millard, I think what a lot of people want to know is, when the patients first started to get sick from COVID-19 at Newmarch House, why wasn't there a fleet of ambulances outside your facility to take them straight to hospital?
Great question. Been asked that a number of times. In accordance with the public health order, decision was made. I think we're really under instructions here. I think it was a containment strategy by State Health, and we complied with that. And hospital home program was implemented. And I think the medical care that's been delivered in Newmarch House has been outstanding.
Okay, so you're saying this was a directive from State Health?
It's hard in the beginning to see actually who you take instructions from. I mean, from the beginning, both Minister Colbeck and State Health were involved trying to assess what ought to be done. And I think what we're seeing now is that others are wanting to actively pursue a strategy where people go immediately to hospital. I think the scale of what we had early on was unprecedented. I think it caught everyone by surprise.
Did you think people should go to hospital? I mean, do you accept that if these patients, elderly and frail as they are and were, had been taken to intensive care, there would not be 18 deaths recorded today? That number would be lower. Do you accept that?
No, I don't accept that. I think if you look around the world about the mortality rate from COVID-19, the number of deaths, they're all tragic, and we regret and we're sorrowful for every one of them. But everyone who wanted and the family wanted hospital transfer, that's actually happened. A number have transferred to hospital but have never been resisted. But at the moment, great care was delivered in the home.
So you're saying great care was delivered in the home and that there was no resistance to people going to hospital, but was it your recommendation? Was it ever a recommendation that the best way to keep people safe was to get them out of the home, even though that would be difficult for some people who are so elderly and frail? No doubt about that.
Look, if I had the time again, I'd be insisting that people who are COVID positive did go to hospital. And that's not
So that would have been the safest place for them then, that you're conceding that?
In hindsight, that would have been my preference if they went to hospital, yes.
Okay. So, in fact, you suggest that you are agreeing with me that fewer people would have died probably if they'd gone to hospital.
No, I can't say that. I think the issue is that if you're looking at care being delivered at a hospital standard versus a residential aged care setting, great medical care was delivered. State Health has been outstanding. You know, the virtual aged care service, Professor James Brownlee, they've done brilliant work. But if you look at the standards of personal protective equipment, infection control practices, these are things that are much better established, and it's sort of bread and butter business, I guess, in a hospital setting. Trying to do that in a residential aged care setting, it's complex. And you have vastly more residential nurses, registered nurses in a hospital setting than you do have in a residential aged care setting. Just the whole fabric of the vinyl wide corridors of a hospital, it's just an easy place to care for containment, yeah.
Of course. So when you say great medical care was delivered, it wasn't great medical care if they would have been safer in hospital, was it?
No, I think the medical care has been brilliant that it has been delivered. I think, you know, we're happy to have that investigated afterwards. I think that's been very clear. I think the challenges immediately were with staffing. It was a massive challenge. We had 66 of our staff offline. And from the outset, everyone scrambled. I think it caught everyone by surprise. We reached out immediately. And, you know, the first working day after Easter, this occurred on Easter Saturday evening. We were reaching out immediately, the first working day on a Tuesday, to get support for registered nurses and carers, and everyone was scrambling. Commonwealth State, we had 9 agencies involved. It was a massive challenge.
Oh, no doubt it was a massive challenge, but given what we'd seen already, we knew from the experience of Dorothy Henderson Lodge, given that we knew that aged care homes were particularly vulnerable, why weren't you better prepared? Why was this infection able to sweep through the home, not for 5 days or 1 week, but 2 weeks, 3 weeks? What went wrong?
Well, we had about 45 of our own CERT staff available and trained in advance, and we'd learned from what Dorothy Henson Lodge went through. The amount of PPE that was required, we had a store and a supply, but the
number... Did you have enough PPE?
We had, for an immediate implementation, we did, but we were very short within a number of days. And we're going through about $21,000 worth of PPE per day. It's just incomprehensible, the amount that you actually go through. And, you know, no aged care supplier has that in their store hold. And we were well supported by the Commonwealth State Government to do that. But in the first week, it was very sketchy.
Okay, so when Kerry Chant, the New South Wales health officer, says that the infection control was obviously lacking or wanting at Newmarch House, do you accept that?
Look, we've had infection control experts from the state government come in, do a lot of training for people on the ground. I think what we have in place now is vastly improved from what it was.
Was it lacking at the time? Were your infection control practices lacking?
Well, Fran, when you bear in mind, we've probably got less than 20% of our own Anglicare staff in the place. We're requiring agency staff. We've got nurse unit managers. You know, this is a complex environment. I think now it's really solid. We haven't had any infections since the 28th of April. I think things are very much under control now. It was a vastly different situation 2 weeks ago. It was extremely challenging. Everyone was stretched.
As much as you were caught off guard, which is, I think, what you were saying, do you also think government, state and federal, were caught off guard?
Look, I have to say that both governments, particularly Senator Colbeck, has been incredibly responsive, and the Commonwealth have had terrific assistance. But the scale of this infection, right from the outset, I think it did cause, you know, caught everyone by surprise. Everyone was playing catch-up.
Given what we know of the impact of this virus on elderly people, given the death rates from the virus in aged care homes overseas, if your aged parent had COVID-19, would you want them in an aged care facility or a hospital?
I think these things need to be, frankly, it needs to be assessed on an individual basis. It really depends on the person's state of health, and you've got to assess what medical care is being delivered. These people are actually in their own home. You know, that's where they're comfortable, they have all the surroundings around them. It's not as clear-cut as saying, get someone off to hospital. But I think given the scale of the outbreak here, given the challenges with staffing, and while at the same time we heard that there were, you know, no elective surgeries in the hospital, there were staff around, you know, it does beg the question about whether they should have just gone off to hospital. And I understand that a public health outbreak at that time, there were real concerns about not wanting to have another Ruby Princess. I get that. But you just need to make this decision on a case-by-case basis, and the decision was made at the time that we have containment and hospital care being delivered in the home.
I've had a lot of listeners write in over the days and weeks saying, well, a lot of older people would probably... It is their home, effectively, and they'd rather stay there than go to hospital. Was that the overwhelming view of the residents and their families, or was that the recommendation?
Well, very early on, everyone who was COVID positive, the advanced care plan was looked at. That is, what are their wishes? Because people in residential aged care, because they are seriously unwell, they have a number of comorbidities, but COVID-19 was something that no one expected to come along. So they were consulted about what their wishes were. A number of families said that they did want interventions. If they did get sick, they wanted to go to the hospital to be ventilated. And in a couple of instances, that's happened. But most people have elected to receive care in the home. And, you know, I think when the evidence comes out, and from what I've seen, the assistance of Professor James Brownlee in the Virtual Aged Care Service and all the clinicians involved, they did an outstanding job.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. It's 7:45. Our guest is Grant Millard, Anglicare Sydney CEO. The Federal Aged Care Minister, Richard Colbeck, wants the current Federal Royal Commission to Aged Care to examine the Newmarch outbreak so that, quote, we understand properly what's occurred here. Do you welcome that? Would you welcome that scrutiny?
Well, who welcomes the Royal Commission? But look, I've got no concern about the facts actually being known and this being investigated. I think given the context that this was in, the severe challenge that everyone had in that terms of government and ourselves, I think we'll learn from this. And I would hope that everyone can learn from our experiences and how things can be done better and just to understand what some of those massive challenges are.
Is the Royal Commission, though, the right place for the inquiry into Newmarch specifically? Should you be part of that? Should it be a separate inquiry into Newmarch?
I think that's for others to determine, Fran. I mean, we'll participate actively with anyone who wants to know.
There were tensions that erupted at the height of this crisis. There were family members protesting every day outside, saying they weren't being communicated with. I mean, clearly there was a breakdown in communication between Newmarch and the families that ultimately got sorted out. But given 18 residents have died, are you expecting, or do you know of any preparing to lodge claims of compensation? Is this an issue for you now?
No, we have no knowledge that we haven't received anything. And look, I will readily acknowledge that communication was a problem. We were scrambling for staff just to provide basic care, and we just didn't do a good enough job in communicating with families. We were writing to them every day. We did that, but they really wanted to know, well, how was their mum and dad? What was actually happening at home? And because 66 of our staff are off, we really had like foreign people in the home, and they didn't know their mum and dad. They didn't know them by name. They didn't know the history. They didn't know the family, and it was just a basic problem. Now that's well sorted, but there was a challenge.
Just harking back to the Royal Commission again, given what happened there at Newmarch, given the sweep of the infection and how it took so long to get it under control, is this an argument for more medically trained staff, more registered nurses, for instance, amongst the staff ratio in aged care homes?
I don't think anyone would really argue about the need to have more registered nurses. The issue was always about funding. Don't raise that issue, but that is an issue. How you can actually afford under the aged care funding instrument to have higher clinical care delivered. But bear in mind, every residential aged care home is different. It is a person's home. Some people do not want a hospital-like existence, and others want to go to the higher care end. It's variable.
Grant Miller, just finally, obviously there'll be a lot of grief amongst the workers and the residents at Newmarch House after this, no doubt about that. But there's a lot of concern too, and a lot of listeners ask this question here about the female staffer who worked those six shifts with mild symptoms, nothing more than a scratchy throat, according to Kerry Chant. How is that person? How are they?
I spoke to her about 10 days ago now, but our staff do call her at least every second day. When I spoke to her, she's, obviously upset. She had no knowledge that she was unwell. Obviously, she has a large amount of grief given this. We've been providing her with every care support that we can in terms of counselling. She ought to bear no guilt for this. It's just happened. I mean, COVID-19, it's a terrible, terrible illness. And what we hear overseas is that about 70% of all care workers who have COVID-19 are asymptomatic. So, her experience, unfortunately, was like most. They just don't know that they're ill.
Grant Millard, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Fran. Pleasure to be with you.
Grant Millard is CEO of Anglicare of Sydney, which operates Newmarch House in Sydney's west, a source of Australia's second biggest coronavirus cluster of deaths. 18 residents died there over the past month.